statements, the committee votes.
There is credible evidence to support a conclusion that antidepressant drugs cause the emergence and or intensification of suicidality and or other violent behaviors. Those in favor of that statement vote yes. Those opposed to that statement, no.
There is total surprise. Unanimously, the committee declares that there is no link between Prozac and the violence described by the families of the victims.
A vote on the following statement.
Jeffrey Lieberman is a member of the committee. Later, he goes on to be the all-powerful president of the American Psychiatric Association. And of the 10 psychiatrists present during the vote, 9 of them had conflicts of interest with one or several pharmaceutical companies. When Prozac was launched, the Lilly Pharmaceutical Company worked very hard. But one of the board directors even denounced the methods he had himself used to boost sales of the drug. He is John Virapen, and he was director of Lilly in Sweden until 1988. And it's not his style to beat around the bush.
And patients, we're consumers. And we're being ripped off right, left, and center. And unfortunately, as I see it today, the drug companies have the power. Total power. They are in all corners of the industrial complex. They're in there somewhere, doing dirty work.
And you were a part of it.
And I was a part. That's why I'm able to tell you all of this. I was a part of it. I've done, my hands are dirty. I'm trying to clean now. It's redemption time.
It's time for redemption, and John Virapen has written a book with a provocative title, Side Effects, Death. Notably, it discusses the way in which he was asked to conceal side effects.
The doctors prescribe to the patient, but don't tell them anything, because they don't know. They rely completely on what the pharma industry tells them. These little salesmen that run around, I was a salesman too. And they used to instruct me when I was a salesman. The first thing is, you don't talk side effects with doctors.
Why do they do that? Because they want to make money, 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 money. They don't care about your lives. They only care about their wallets.
From conferences to interviews, John Virapen does not hesitate to reveal what he implemented to encourage sales, corruption, gifts, and trips.
To children.
General practitioners, they don't usually get to go to big Congress and World Congress here and there. So one day I got the idea that maybe we should do something with these guys. So I gathered a whole bunch of them and took them to Singapore. Fly them down to Singapore and gave them works. I mean, it was exclusive. When they came back, my sales escalated.
In light of these accusations, Lilly, the lab that created Prozac, did not wish to meet with us. But this is what they said by email. John Virapen has not been employed by Lilly since 1988. He therefore cannot be considered as a credible source of information concerning the current activities of the group, its motives, or practices. The Lilly Pharmaceutical Company, like all the others, nevertheless fought hard so that the American administration did not impose a black box warning on antidepressant leaflets, an explicit caution against the risks of suicide or violent behavior. But in 2004, finally, it became a done deal. This victory is owed to the activism of victims' families and their lawyers, such as Andy Vickery. The pharmaceutical industry also has a bone to pick with this Texan. He also received billions in compensation during the famous arrangements whereby laboratories preferred to pay out rather than stand trial. To better explain how a pill can kill, he makes use of a puzzle. His demonstration, he claims, applies for all psychotropic drugs.
Is there a phenomenon, a distinct phenomenon, of Prozac-induced suicide?
The first attribute is the patients became suddenly suicidal. People who've never thought of killing themselves, of harming themselves, take one of these drugs, whoom, they go instantly from that feeling to death. The second piece of the puzzle was that the suicides were all violent. I've shared with you already the story of Pat Williamson. She was on Prozac 9 days when she came in one morning to her husband and said, "Honey, would you show me how to kill myself?" And her husband said, "Oh, Pat, please." And he decides to go check up on her after 15 or 20 minutes and finds that she has made 100 mutilating cuts in her body. The third piece of the puzzle that Eli Lilly noticed was an obsessive quality to the act. It's just this sudden impulse to do something really violent, really dangerous to themselves or others. And it's just, they're just overwhelmed by it. They're obsessed with the idea, and they cannot control their behavior. In the period of time between the person starts to take the drug and the time of their death or suicide attempt, that there's abnormal behavior. Something different is going on. And sometimes the medical help is, "Oh, you just need to take more of this drug. Let's increase your dose." It's like, "Oh, there's a little fire. Let's pour some gasoline on it." And the final piece of the puzzle is, almost all of the cases that I have handled, the death has happened within 30 days of the time the person either started the drug or had their dose increased.
Once again, Lilly Laboratory only answers our accusations by mail. They explain that one of the most striking studies in the last few years shows that there is a decrease in suicide, -32%, and in mortality, -49%, when depressed patients take antidepressants. But what is the truth? This study is contested by other studies that claim the contrary. And if in the United States, thousands of victims came to the forefront, then why would France be spared, the leading consumer worldwide of psychotropic drugs? In April 2014, a court trial would clarify the current state of affairs in an enlightening manner. Back in December 2008, Jean is depressed. He struggles to deal with his professional life, and at the birth of his son, he attempts suicide. He therefore went to the psychiatrist, Dr. Gossares. The doctor recommends that he try out a new antidepressant, which was not yet available on the market, Brintellix. Jean did not react to the treatment. The psychiatrist proposed to double the dosage. A few days later, Jean set himself on fire. Corinne, Jean's wife, refused to believe that it was a random suicide. She alerted the authorities, and Dr. Gossares was put under inspection on 7 charges. He was accused of embezzlement, but worse, putting others' lives in danger for at least 8 patients, including Jean, Corinne's husband. On April 30th, 2014, the doctor was strangely judged in Bordeaux, the court where he himself was a judiciary expert. He received a suspended sentence of 6 months that he appealed. But why would the pharmaceutical company Lundbeck, the creators of the antidepressants, not be investigated themselves? The pharmaceutical company Lundbeck has no interest in this affair going public. They've invested millions in order to get Brintellix approved by medical authorities. However, Jean was not at all the same since his dosage of Brintellix was raised, as described by Corinne and her mother. For Lundbeck, it is therefore not Brintellix that is to blame, but Jean's depression. It's a credible defense, which is used by all pharmaceutical companies when they are blamed. However, we also met with other victims of this trial period, and bizarrely, they all describe the same symptoms. Such as Christian Mounier, who also tested Brintellix for 8 months. Since, he has lost his job, his memory, and he describes himself as a vegetable. A man who is no longer himself, another who commits suicide, apparently devastating side effects for 8 sufferers. But there was also the suicide of 2 more patients just after coming off Brintellix. This bad streak should have alerted the authorities. However, nothing would come of it, as on the same day as Jean's self-immolation, Dr. Gossares wiped his name from the file. His death was therefore no longer related to the clinical tests. The medical authorities explained to us that for each test of a drug, they only receive the results achieved across the whole territory. The botched trials of Dr. Gosseres were therefore lost in the mass and mixed with several other accepted studies across the world. As this document shows, that makes Brintellix's market release official. Lundbeck throws the blame back to the public health authorities. So what can be said of the package insert that we found in the United States, where Brintellix has been approved since 2013? Side effects are documented in two whole pages. Especially, though, the principal paragraph warns against the raised risk of suicidal thoughts and behaviors. It's the famous black box warning. In other words, the highest alert level. In France, Brintellix has just been approved for sale on the market. It has therefore been judged as useful in fighting depression. The doors are slammed shut. Jean is responsible for his own atrocious suicide. Just like the death of Mark, Aurélie's murderous thoughts and suicide attempt, or the fall of Christian Mounier. If the effectiveness of such medication on most serious depressive states cannot be denied, how many more tragedies need to occur before the effects of psychotropic drugs on some patients are truly recognized?
Seems that as long as money and power are involved in the realm of healthcare, pills that are expected to cure depression actually cause suicide and murder. And that's it for this week's program. Until next week and another Aperture, it's goodbye.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In Britain, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has acknowledged that hundreds of schools in England are suffering from crumbling concrete. The Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, has been accused of failure to fund a programme to replace ageing classrooms. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Irish Times has covered this story and tells us more. Britain's education minister warned on Monday that hundreds more school buildings in England might be crumbling and unsafe for pupils after authorities announced more than 150 British schools are at risk of collapse. Britain's Secretary of State for Education, Gillian Keegan, said the government was still waiting on responses from around 10% of the 15,000 schools in England that were sent surveys to identify those at risk. This comes after authorities ordered 104 schools to shut buildings with old and weak concrete to close because of safety concerns. More than 150 schools have been found to contain buildings made from reinforced, autoclaved, aerated concrete, which has been assessed to be at risk of collapse after exceeding its 30-year lifespan. The lightweight form of reinforced autoclaved aerated concrete was widely used for walls, floors and ceilings during the 1960s through to 1980s, but now it is considered weak and unsafe for construction purposes. Gillian Keegan said schools that were suspected to have RAAC, that is reinforced autoclave aerated concrete, would be inspected in the next 2 weeks. She told an interview with BBC, most of them won't have RAAC. It could be hundreds more. The British government has claimed the majority of the currently affected schools would still be able to operate largely normally. The revelations of crumbling school buildings just days before the start of a new term has sparked anger among parents and teachers and represents a new political headache for Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's Conservative government. The crumbling school buildings issue has added to the impression of decaying public infrastructure in Britain. An official in the former government put the blame for the shortcomings in British schools on Rishi Sunak, who in his previous job as finance minister had halved annual funding to repair schools when the education department had asked for it to be doubled. Former permanent secretary Jonathan Slater told the BBC, "We were saying there is a critical risk to life if this programme is not funded properly. I was absolutely amazed to see the decision made by the government." The opposition Labour Party said the Conservative government has not taken repeated warnings about crumbling schools seriously. It charged Rishi Sunak with putting children's lives at risk by refusing to approve what needed to be spent to fix the problem. The scandals that Rishi Sunak's government has been facing, its worst economic issues in decades. Also, British workers in various sectors, including transportation, healthcare and schools, are in dire economic straits. The workers have gone on repeated strikes over the past year because of low wages and rising cost of living crisis. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story. UK teachers suggested more British children are likely to arrive at school this term with unclean clothes and unbrushed teeth. According to an opinion poll, nearly 3 in 4 or 72% of school staff believe there has been an increase in hygiene poverty issues in their school over the past year. The survey of 500 school staff in the United Kingdom who had said they were aware of pupils experiencing hygiene poverty, suggests that 71% expect the level of hygiene poverty to have increased at the start of the school year this month. Dirty school uniforms and PE kits, unwashed hair and unclean teeth were the most cited indicators of hygiene poverty by school staff questioned in June. The opinion poll carried out for charity The Hygiene Bank and cleaning brand Small defines hygiene poverty as those who are caught between being able to heat their home, pay their bills, buy food, or keep clean. Some of the school staff reported personally washing uniforms and PE kits for children at home and handing out laundry detergent for families in need. The survey, which was conducted by market research platform Attest, suggests that 72% of school staff said they had seen pupils affected by hygiene poverty experience low self-esteem. Meanwhile, 53% of school staff said their pupils were isolated or left out by other pupils in class, and 50% said they had seen a negative impact on mental health for those experiencing hygiene poverty. More than a quarter, or 26% of school staff said they had seen absenteeism as a result of hygiene poverty. One respondent said students are often left with no desk partner in class. Makes it awkward for staff members to deal with the situation, Students are often faced with working alone. Other students make nasty comments about them in front of the class to single them out. Other students make nasty comments about them in front of the class to single them out. Another respondent said they had a feeling of powerlessness, that they could not do more. Sarah Smith, executive head teacher of St. Cuthbert's Catholic Academy, a primary school in Blackpool in northwest England, said, "We have seen an increase in students coming to school with unwashed uniforms, and we know that this has an effect on their mental health and overall well-being, which in turn will have a negative impact on their education." Brand Small, in collaboration with the Hygiene Bank, is hoping to expand its Suds in Schools initiative, which provides mini laundrettes to schools so more families in need are provided with clean clothes. Suds in Schools want to raise £25,000 to establish an additional 25 laundrettes in British schools. Lucy Wishart of Small said, "With hygiene poverty increasing, it's more important than ever for us to support more schools." She added, "We believe that everyone should have access to clean clothes in order to live their life to the fullest, and our research shows just how much this can impact young people at a crucial stage in their academic and social lives." Julie McCulloch, Director of Policy at the Association of School and College Leaders, said, "Hygiene poverty is linked to very high levels of deprivation as families struggle with the cost of things like washing machines, energy bills and clothes." She said, "Many schools routinely help out by discreetly washing clothes and providing items of uniform. This has long been the case, but has become more of an issue following the pandemic and cost of living crisis as more families struggle financially." Julie McCulloch added, "The level of child poverty in the United Kingdom is utterly unacceptable, and the government must do more to tackle the problem."
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The war drags on in Ukraine. Signs are emerging that do not bode well for the US-led coalition against Russia. Just days ago, the Slovak Social Democracy Party, which is a pro-Russia party, won the country's parliamentary elections. The leftist Smeristy Party, led by former Premier Robert Fico, has not secured enough votes to form a government and needs to form a coalition with other parties. But the victory has been interpreted as a sign of growing war fatigue in Europe. The party's leader has said that no more weapons would go to Ukraine. He has also questioned the logic of the EU's Russia sanctions and even accused NATO of causing the war.
I believe that on the one hand, yes, we should expect certain, let's say, uncomfortable relationship between Brussels and Slovakia. But then on the other hand, I also think that the relationship will also be rather pragmatic. However, the danger is real when it comes to Slovakia's declining support to Ukraine. And this will also have its impact to weaken the EU's unity when it comes to its support for Ukraine.
Just weeks ago, Poland, a staunch ally of Ukraine, announced that it would no longer supply weapons to its neighbor amid a diplomatic dispute over Kiev's grain exports. Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki has said that Poland's focus was instead on defending itself with more modern weapons. The country's president later tried to modify this stance, but the dispute is seen as a rift among members of the anti-Moscow alliance. Poland has supplied hundreds of Soviet-era tanks and 14 MiG-29 fighter jets to Ukraine and served as a major transit hub for weapons from other Western nations. These developments have stirred talk of a global shift in sentiment towards supporting Ukraine as the war grinds on, more than a year and a half after it began.
It is full of Ukrainians here. This is what I seriously do not like. They get benefits, energy costs went up, everything went up. So basically, they are getting benefits, and we, our citizens, we pay.
The money spent on the war in Ukraine has unnerved many citizens in European countries. Days ago, hundreds of people staged rallies in different German cities to vent their anger at Berlin's growing support for Ukraine. Many protesters carried banners and placards advocating for peace in Ukraine while expressing opposition to government policies, including the remilitarization of Germany. Demonstrators said Germany's decision to send more weaponry to Ukraine risks escalation of the conflict with Russia. Some protesters demanded that Germany pull out from the NATO alliance. Some said the United States is benefiting from Germany's intervention in the Russia-Ukraine war. Germany is among Western countries that have provided Ukraine with a wide range of weapons since the war erupted in February 2022.
I'm mainly concerned with crisis intervention and resolving this armed conflict on the one hand. On the other hand, of course, there are trends in the militarization of Germany. After all, from a purely political point of view, Germany is right in the middle, and America is shamelessly taking advantage of that too, using citizens through media policy to perhaps ultimately use them for their own goals, and Ukrainian citizens were also exploited.
The German economy has suffered due to crisis in Ukraine. It tipped into a recession at the start of the year and stagnated in the second quarter. High inflation, industrial slowdown, and reduction in global demand for manufactured goods have all been weighing on the German economy. And earlier in October, dozens of anti-war activists in New York City said that the interest of NATO depends on the perpetuation of imperial capital and extraction of wealth from the dispossessed.
Unification of peace forces in the United States, recognizing that it's the United States and NATO who are the to blame and the fundamental cause of the conflict in Ukraine, and that if we can force the U.S. government to stop sending money and weapons to Ukraine, the war will end the very next day.
A poll conducted in August said most Americans oppose Congress authorizing additional funding. Overall, 55% say the U.S. Congress should not authorize additional funding to support Ukraine versus 45% who say Congress should authorize such funding. And 51% say that the U.S. has already done enough to help Ukraine. The removal of Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House of Representatives has added to the uncertainty around aid for Ukraine.
Kevin McCarthy has been ousted as Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives in a brutal, historic rebellion by far-right Republicans. The rebellious GOP lawmakers, furious at his cooperation with Democrats, have accused him of a string of broken promises. This is the first ouster of a Speaker in the House's 234-year history.
On this vote, the yeas are 216, the nays are 210. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table. The office of Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
I mean, it's a sign, I think, if history is any guide at all to this, it's a sign of a party in disintegration. I mean, that's what's happening. and it's melting down, and that's pretty clear. That's the older history. The more recent history, I think, is that what we're seeing today is the latest installment in the, you know, ever continuing coup d'etat by Donald Trump. I mean, that's what we're seeing.
The vote to oust McCarthy marks a major escalation in tensions for a House GOP conference that has been mired in infighting, and it comes just days after McCarthy successfully engineered a last-minute bipartisan effort to avert a government shutdown.
That I think probably the next step would be a shutdown, which is really what they're probably aiming for. They wanted to get McCarthy out of there in part because he stood in the way of that. Bunch of reasons, but that's part of it. And it's the politics of chaos.
The effort to oust the speaker was led by GOP Republican Matt Gaetz. There is also a significant amount of distrust and anger from House Democrats towards McCarthy over his actions as speaker and the House GOP agenda. The rebellious lawmakers accused McCarthy of a flip-flop, saying he had promised an end to hastily prepared stopgap legislation hammered out with the support of the opposition and a return to budgeting through the committee process. Some Republican leaders condemned McCarthy's removal, with former vice president and current presidential candidate Mike Pence suggesting it would undermine the GOP in the eyes of voters. There is no clear successor to oversee the House Republican majority. Congress has just over 40 days to agree on a deal to avoid another potential government shutdown.
But there is a certain nihilistic quality to what they're doing. However, there is also, you know, genius in the madness, because the madness is about creating as much chaos as possible. And then, you know, then the Trump people will step in.
Speaker Kevin McCarthy's ouster could signal a shift in the U.S. House of Representatives on aid to Ukraine, with some of his possible successors staunchly opposed to assisting Kiev. Republic opponents of the aid view it as excessive spending and a misplaced U.S. policy priority.
I rise to put the leadership of the House, the Senate, and the President of the United States on notice. I will not consent to any expedited passage of any spending bill that provides any more American aid to Ukraine. It's as if no one has noticed that we have no extra money to send to Ukraine. Our deficit this year will exceed $1.5 trillion. Borrowing money from China to send it to Ukraine makes no sense. It's not as if we have some sort of rainy day fund sitting around, trillions of dollars in a pot of money, and we're just going to send that to Ukraine. We're going to borrow it. When we borrow it and create new money to pay for that borrowing, we create the inflation that is plaguing our economy.
McCarthy earlier this week denied accusations by Gaetz that he had cut a secret deal with Biden to allow the House to vote on Ukraine aid. McCarthy said then he wanted more information from the Biden administration. President Joe Biden asked Congress in July to approve another $24 billion related to Ukraine. Although the compromise struck in Congress dropped new fundings for Ukraine amid opposition from hardline Republicans, it remains unclear what might happen next. Biden and his Democratic Party say the U.S. has a duty to help Ukraine.
And why it's critically important for the United States and our allies that we keep our commitment. We can support Ukraine in the next tranche that we need, and there is another means by which we may be able to find funding for that, but I'm not going to get into that now.
However, the issue has become so politicized in Washington that the fate of vital military aid is now in jeopardy. The U.S. has approved four rounds of aid to Ukraine, totaling about $113 billion, with some of that money going towards replenishment of U.S. military equipment that was sent to the front lines.
Since the beginning of Russia's war in Ukraine, the American taxpayers provided Ukraine with $113 billion. Over the 583 days of war, between February 24, 2022 and the end of the month, that averages $6.8 billion per month, or $223 million per day. There's a lot of things that we need to fix in our country before we borrow money to try to perpetuate a war in another country.
There are also widespread concerns over corruption in Ukraine. The U.S. is increasingly urging Ukraine to do more to combat corruption. This is while Ukraine considers the direct budget support it gets from the U.S. and other foreign allies to be vital to keeping its economy afloat.
It's just the kind of thing arms manufacturers want to hear. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky saying we are creating such a defense potential for Ukraine. His excitement was evident in this tweet, glorifying the military manufacturers, and that Ukraine is determining that. Finally, the truth is out in the open, normalizing war profiteering Zelensky style, and many would argue that was one of the goals of the U.S. in its proxy war with Russia. Except now, the Ukrainian president has turned Ukrainians into proxies of the military-industrial complex, as well as the Pentagon. Zelensky's sentiment was relayed while Kiev hosted 252, quote, defense industry corporations from 30 different countries. Zelensky urged the war profiteers to open factories in Ukraine to cut out the middleman. His speech included phrases like the defense industrial complex, arsenal of the free world, and a special economic regime for the defense industrial complex. Consider what the Ukrainian president is promoting. A war to the military manufacturers to show prospective buyers and investors how various military equipment can rip apart human bodies in order to profit from death and destruction. These are the gruesome stats so far. Over 27,000 Ukrainian casualties. Meanwhile, Russia's military casualties have approached 300,000. The Russian numbers dwarf the Ukrainian figures, which officials put at close to 70,000 killed and between 100 to 120,000 wounded. Perhaps like no other time, the war in Ukraine, which Russia calls a special military operation, finds itself at a crossroads.
The bill is passed, and without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
U.S. Congress just passed an 11th-hour funding bill that excluded aid for Ukraine. This means the U.S. president's hands are tied in order to keep the aid flowing, at least for now. To make matters worse, the Pentagon has said that there's only $5.2 billion left to provide military support for Ukraine. Additionally, the account that the U.S. used for a long-term program to modernize the Ukrainian army and to increase its compatibility with NATO is empty. On the surface, that may sound like a bad thing, but if you think about it, that's great news. Maybe the war may come to an end soon. That, however, depends on who you ask. The EU foreign policy chief is not too happy about the U.S. turn of events.
Our support to Ukraine not only continues, but increases. Or, at least, by the time being, the proposition on the table shows that we want to continue in increasing it. And to tell the truth, we were surprised by the fact that the last-minute agreement has taken a decision that we have to regret deeply.
Europe is reluctant for this war to end. It has believed the U.S. line that Russia poses an existential threat to it. This is part of the reason why the U.K. has announced that it will send military instructors to the country. It will also transfer training and production of military equipment to Ukraine.
We stand short with you. We feel your pain.
There is one important fact behind this announcement, which was made by the UK Defense Secretary. The important point that the UK will send military instructors to Ukraine, all to happen on Ukrainian soil. There's an American saying that says war is a racket, and the US's Big Five is very well aware of that. They are Boeing, General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and Raytheon, who split more than $150 billion in Pentagon contracts annually. That's nearly 20% of the total Pentagon budget. Ever since the Ukraine war began, they have reaped huge profits and in turn have contributed to the U.S. economy. Europe is following suit, and why shouldn't they? Their economies are not doing that well, and like the U.S., they want a piece of the pie. To manufacture weapons in Ukraine in order to make up for some of the funds that they sent there. We mentioned the UK. Germany's military manufacturer, Rheinmetall, has also announced that it will operate a maintenance plant in Ukraine. But Americans are angry. They want the support to stop.
It's the United States and NATO who are are to blame and the fundamental cause of the conflict in Ukraine, and that if we can force the U.S. government to stop sending money and weapons to Ukraine, the war will end the very next day.
And in Germany, EU's powerhouse, things are pretty bad when doctors protest the high cost of living.
The clinics have no choice but to protest because we have to make sure we have money by the end of the month to pay all the staff and house rent.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
October 3, 2023 marks the 8th anniversary of one of the most horrific attacks on a medical facility in recent history. Back in 2015, U.S. warplanes heavily bombed a trauma hospital run by Doctors Without Borders in Afghanistan's northern city of Kunduz, killing 42 people. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, in the pitch darkness of night on October 3, 2015, a hospital operated by Doctors Without Borders in northern Afghanistan's Kunduz city came under high-precision, indiscriminate airstrikes, shattering the deafening silence. Kunduz Trauma Center, including its intensive care unit, emergency rooms, lab, X-ray unit, outpatient department, mental health, and physiotherapy ward, were all reduced to rubble. At least 42 people, including patients, staff, and caretakers, were killed in the devastating attack carried out by an American gunship, marking one of the deadliest chapters in the 20-year-long American war. October 3, 2023 marked the 8th anniversary of the tragic incident, and yet another reminder of how the U.S.-led coalition perpetuated horrendous war crimes in South Asian country following the invasion in 2001, and how the victims of America's longest war that lasted two decades were denied justice. The only thing Americans did was to apologize to MSF, apologize for destroying dozens of lives and families, making more children orphans, and filling more graveyards in Afghanistan. At the end of September 2015, there was fierce fighting between the government and rebel forces in the north of the country, and the Taliban managed to capture the city of Qunduz. The Afghan National Army responded to it with a counteroffensive in an attempt to regain control of the city, so they called in the U.S. Air Force for help. The Qunduz Trauma Center was located in the city center, operated by Doctors Without Borders, MSF, since 2011. It catered to the local population in Qunduz. Although it was in the middle of a rapidly changing front line, MSF personnel had informed all warring parties of the location of its hospital complex. Medical facilities are protected under international humanitarian law, so MSF officials and doctors had considered themselves relatively safe until the hell broke loose. American military officials were also informed, and precise GPS coordinates were sent to them 4 days before the airstrike, according to multiple reports. At 2:08 a.m. on October 3rd, the U.S. Air Force started precise and repeated airstrikes on the Qunduz Trauma Center complex that lasted for around 1 hour. A U.S. AC-130 Hercules gunship fired 211 shells on the main hospital building where patients were sleeping in their beds or being operated on in the operating theater. The surrounding buildings were left mostly untouched. During an hour of horror, MSF teams desperately called both Afghan and U.S. military authorities to stop the airstrikes. In a report at the time, the Washington Post admitted that the U.S. AC-130 gunship aircraft circled the hospital in the darkness of night, loaded with 25mm and 40mm cannon, as well as a 105mm howitzer. Every time the aircraft passed, approximately every 15 minutes, it fired and hit the main hospital building repeatedly and precisely, MSF said at the time, suggesting that it was not accidental. U.S. commander in Afghanistan, John F. Campbell, later admitted that the hospital was mistakenly struck without a shred of remorse and without any promise of justice and accountability. Amid the fighting between two warring sides, the MSF staff was overwhelmed with hundreds of wounded patients, whose number increased as the fighting intensified. In the 5 days leading up to the airstrike, they treated 376 patients in the emergency room. On the night of the fatal air attack, there were 105 patients in a hospital building, as well as 140 of the MSF staff, of whom 80 were on duty, according to reports. According to official MSF data, at least 42 people were killed, including 24 patients, among others, 3 children, 14 staff, and 4 caretakers. An additional 37 people were seriously injured. The 12 staff killed were all Afghan nationals, which was a significant loss for a nation that had and continues to have an extremely low doctor-patient ratio. Their patients burned in their beds, their medical staff were decapitated or lost limbs, and others were shot from the air while they fled the burning building. The U.S. airstrike made the hospital unusable, and all surviving critical patients were referred to other providers. And all MSF staff was evacuated from the war-torn Kunduz. It was the only health facility of its kind in northeastern Afghanistan, according to MSF, which provided free high-level life and limb-saving trauma care, especially during the years of war. After the attack, MSF demanded an independent investigation by the International Humanitarian Fact-Finding Commission, IHFCC.org, to establish the facts of the devastating attack. The call was summarily rejected by Washington. A U.S. report concludes that it was not a war crime. Joseph Votel, commander of U.S. Central Command, said after the attack, "The investigation concluded that certain personnel failed to comply with the rules of the engagement in the law of armed conflict. However, the investigation did not conclude that these failures amounted to a war crime. The label war crime is typically reserved for national acts and intentional acts, intentional targeting of civilians, or intentionally targeting protected objects or locations." In response, MSF President Meni Nicolai said the report amounted to an admission of an uncontrolled military operation in a densely populated urban area during which U.S. forces failed to follow the basic laws of war. Human rights activists say the demand for an independent investigation was fair, but it could have exposed the U.S. military adventures in Afghanistan, and that was a reason enough for them to reject it.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Monday, the 6th of Ramadan, 1394, the 23rd of September, 1974. What is our responsibility? Have you thought about that? When we are faced with someone like Shuraih, someone like Mughira, someone like Zayd ibn Amr, it doesn't matter on which level you are. When it comes to a person such as this, how should we judge them? In some places they accept religion, faith and morality, whilst at others there is no trace of any religion, faith or morality in their lives. What should we say of such a person? Do we consider them a believer? The Quran clearly says that such a person is not a believer. Therefore, the kind of faith that is recognized in the framework of Islamic thought cannot be the faith of these kind of people, of which there are many like them in today's world. On the contrary, the kind of faith that Islam values is the faith that is preserved in every place, with every person, at every time, in every way, through a sense of moral duty and through doing what is right. Surely those who believe and do righteous deeds. Therefore, the kinds of promises given for faith and given to the faithful are referring to this kind of faith. the kind that is backed up by right actions.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
If we are told the believers will be victorious, it means those kinds of believers will be surely victorious. It means those kinds of believers will be surely victorious. If we are told that the hand of Allah is with the believers, it means it is with those believers. If we are told that nature itself will help the faithful, it is those kinds of believers, not believers like me and you. Therefore, the least we can take away from this discussion is that if we think we have faith, but our faith does not have the effects or the consequences faith is supposed to have, the promises that Allah makes to the faithful in the Quran, we should not be surprised. Because now we know that the kind of faith to which these promises are given is not the faith we have. Now, let us look at the following verses. Certainly we have sent down manifest signs. The Quran, Surah 24, verse 46. These verses of the Quran are clear. Those people who do not allow themselves to understand the Quran deny themselves this clarity. And Allah guides whomever He wishes to a straight path.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Oh,
Under a sea of black flags, thousands of Palestinians from the blockaded coastal territory gathered in Gaza City in a rally organized by the Islamic Jihad movement. Men and women from all walks of life came out to take part in the Islamic Jihad's 36th anniversary celebration. The event was a massive display that showed the broad support for the Palestinian resistance movement by people in Gaza. The Islamic Jihad movement was founded by the late Dr. Fathi Shaqaqi, who was inspired by Iran's revolution and the teachings of founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini.
The Zionist enemy must understand that killing our military commanders will not weaken the Islamic Jihad. Our movement is getting stronger and continues to develop its military capabilities to fight the Zionist enemy and liberate our land.
Addressing the masses via satellite transmission, the Islamic Jihad Secretary General Ziad Nakhala called on all Palestinian factions to adhere to resistance